Okay. I'll just start. This is deader than usual. Before we start, are there any questions about stuff that I talked about yesterday? No? Okay. In Blackboard, I've posted a bunch more stuff. So here's the slides for relational algebra, slides for the introduction of XML, the notes from yesterday, and then I added a bunch of stuff. Do XML things that you can use for assignment 5. I don't know if that's out yet or not, but it will be. Then you can just start using those things. The two bottom ones, the XML copy editor and the XML notepad, was the stuff that was already there from last year. I don't know how usable they are. Usually they're stuff that was there before is pretty shit. But I just use like VS Code, and that works pretty well with these extensions. And I've also put the slides for XML validation, XML schema there, if you want to start looking ahead, if you want to like start assignment 5 or whatever. So as I said yesterday, next week there's no lectures. I'm not here. So you just can start going through the slides, like take care of assignments, create your own databases for like hobby projects and stuff if you want to. It's up to you. Realistically, you're probably not going to do anything, but you know, you still have the choice. No questions? Can I just start? I know yesterday I said I was not going to talk about relational algebra, but just in case I'm not the one making the exam, then I can say that I gave it, even though I'm just going to be like super quick about it. What this is basically all of the concepts that are associated with databases come from like some theoretical conceptual place, right? Like some from like a mathematical perspective, basically. So you have like the computer nerds, which are already like pretty nerdy, and then you have like all the math nerds or the super nerds. And they have defined like how behaviors of, you know, set operations should work, and what's the mathematical notation for retrieving of information, blah, blah, blah. So I'm guessing no one here is going to like be creating a new SQL from scratch or something. But if you are, or if you ever need to use these sort of notation, it'll probably be if you're like writing an academic paper or something like that, it won't really come up in real life. So all of these you'll see in the slides, there's a bunch of like mathematical looking things. They basically correspond to what a SQL command would do. So here you have projection, which is basically selecting 3 columns from a table, right? Or you have this, which is a selection that shows a filtering of that specific table using a using like a specific field. And here's a notation for like grouping functions. That weird like T looking thing. And this is a notation for like joins and cross products and whatnot. So instead, what this basically does is if you have like this type of notation, it just means you just come to the slides and try and figure out what the weird symbol is. And it will, like somewhere where you're searching, it will have like the equivalent of this is what it means in SQL. Cartesian product, blah, blah, blah. All this stuff is stuff we've already approached in the SQL lectures. And then there's set operations like differences and intersections and unions and all that stuff. Do you want me to like go further into this or can I just move on? Yeah, moving on. Cool. So just like skim through the slides. If I'm the one that's making the exam, you don't need to worry about this. If I'm not, I will warn you, like, look through this stuff just in case. Yeah. Moving on to XML. Garbage duplicating my screen. Please mirror the screens. Settings. Mirror. Okay. So, what is XML? Has any of you like looked at XML before? No? Has any of you looked at HTML before? Yeah. So, XML is another markup language where HTML is used to present data, display data. XML is used to exchange data. So the whole objective, that's what the X stands for, exchange. And the whole objective of XML is to have structured data where the data actually has meaning that the computer can understand, that humans can understand. So you have like some structure to it, and then you can share that specific like structure of documents between users and people. And it all makes sense because it's structured in a nice way and it's usable and whatnot. So it's tag-based, just like HTML. Has a specific standard. It gives context to the data, makes it meaningful, specifies or represents the data hierarchically, and it's also structured. It's not a replacement for HTML. It's not used to present stuff on the screen. It's just a way of exchanging data. Nobody should be using XML to like create websites or whatever. It's not a programming language or a network transfer protocol or a database. Even though the data can be stored in just plain XML files and be used in that way instead of having databases. But yeah, that's for different uses. So here's an example of an XML excerpt of stuff. So it's an article. We define an author for that article, a title, and then we could have like some more stuff underneath. So this is pretty well structured. If a computer is going through this stuff, they can understand what is in that document. They'll just go through the tags and just be like, okay, this is an article, and all the information that's between the author tags is the author of this article, and whatever's between title is a title. But for a person looking at this stuff, it's also fairly understandable, right? You can just look at it and be like, okay, there's some structure to this. There's some like different fields. I understand what this means. This is also XML, but it's garbage because like the tags aren't really descriptive, and that kind of defeats the purpose of XML. The point is for you to also be able to look at it and understand what's there. The computer could have some internal representation of what does T108 mean. But remember, like XML is both for computers and for users. So if the tags are garbage, the data is garbage. Same with this. This is pretty impossible to figure out what's in the data. That's like some computer-generated thing, probably. There's probably some structure to that data that when it gets parsed by something, but you can't really tell as a human looking at it. So that this is also a pretty bad example of what XML should be. What a good and useful XML structure is depends from use case to use case, right? Depending on what your application needs, like the structure of the data, all that stuff, you can come up with very good solutions that accurately describe the data and the problems, or you can just come up with garbage. So it depends on the situation. The main like application or excuse for XML is that it's a standard, right? Like it's been defined, like this is how XML looks like, and then everybody kind of agrees like, okay, all the structure for what an XML file is you know, has tags, it has attributes, it has all this stuff, which makes it so that everybody kind of agreed like, okay, this is a good way of exchanging data. It's good enough. So then it's used for basically everything. Well, to some extent. Nowadays it's kind of being replaced by a lot of other stuff. So here, for example, for databases and whatnot, we just use SQL. For documents or like some data exchange, we can just use JSON instead. For configurations, we could use like YAML. So slowly, XML, it's not dying, but it's being used for more specific use cases as opposed to being used for everything, which is kind of okay because we should use different ways of exchanging information depending on what we actually need from them. So XML is used for two main things, like documents. Think of it like a Word document where you can have defined like a header and a footer and the main part, and then you can define an article, you can define like a title and subsections and all that stuff. XML is useful for that. and also for like hierarchical data structures. So anything that requires a big tree of data, you know, it's easy enough to represent with XML. So here's an example of document markup. So we have an article, and then we split it up into sections. There's some literature at the bottom there that cites something and with the other. And then we have some titles for each of the section, which are attributes for those specific tags. And then we... by adding markup to a document, like we could just have the same document as just a plain text file, right? Take away all the tags, like all the same information is still there. At least for a human, if you like look at the Word document, you can, because you're human, you can look at it and be like, okay, this is obviously a title. There's a page break here, so this is like different sections, blah, blah, blah. But for a computer, it's a bit more fuzzy. You know, they can look at what the structure of a document is and kind of, you know, guess. But if you annotate it like this, then they'll know like, oh, you know, give me section 2 of the article, and then the computer can just go look through this markup document here and be like, oh, okay, yeah, it's here, as opposed to just, you know, guessing. So this kind of gives you some more like structural and semantic information about what's going on. Say, for example, when you search for this has been used, or these concepts have been used on the web, for example. Say when you're searching for something in Google, if you search like XML, like all these descriptions of things, it isn't Google that is, you know, figuring this stuff out on their own. Or there's no person that's going through like every website and being like, okay, this can be the description of this website and this can be the title. It's usually like whoever programmed it already annotated like, okay, this is the title of this page and this is the description of the page, and then here's some more like extra information that we want to give about this stuff. And for example, here somebody also annotated this, so it'll fetch from Wikipedia or whatever and get you that extra information. Maybe they didn't necessarily do it through XML, but they still did it through like some semantic separation of what the content of those pages are. That's why it's important, because, you know, search engines and everything else can search through like all this structured data and figure out like what is necessary here, what is important, what is not. So before XML, it was just common to just have like common CSV files and stuff like that. Take all the data, bundle it up, send it somehow, and then we'll interpret it, hopefully, in like our specific way. XML created more of a standard of like, okay, we should structure the information in a specific way with all these tags and things, and then the thing is like all organized and well described. So you don't need to have like specific knowledge about a domain to understand what is going on there. Some advantages: it's portable, readable, very expressive, flexible. You know, you can use it for programming and stuff, and can convert it between representations of stuff. We'll see how to do that later. And it's widely supported. about as many dramatics people as web development people here today. But for all the web development people, we don't really use XML for stuff anymore. We just migrated away to just using JSON because it's convenient. But yeah, I think you up there are all still stuck using XML, so sucks for you. No, like XML is good for that type of data representation, but when it comes to like programming and interacting with this data with like JavaScript and web servers and stuff like that, JSON is usually a bit more appropriate to that sort of use. XML is still pretty useful for you guys. So, some benefits. So it's cross-platform. It's just it's a standard, right? So it's no there's no person like trying to reinvent how XML should work, or there's no like or I'm sure there are like plenty of like extensions of like oh yeah I needed XML to also do this so I've done it, and then there's a bunch of Frankensteins out there in the world of mixed XML and whatever the fuck. But for the most part, it's just a standard of like, okay, this is how XML works and how it behaves, and then you just use it everywhere. And then it also has like very strict rules for like how syntax and structure and all that works. So I can see the age of these slides by who they reference in who uses XML. Netscape is not really a thing. It hasn't been a thing for quite a while, but yeah, it used to be. So back then, XML was like the most widely used thing. Nowadays, like the scope has been a bit narrowed, but. Also for like the web development people, if you're stuck with like some legacy code base that still uses SOAP instead of REST, then you're going to have a lot of fun doing XML stuff. But hopefully you don't end up like that. So what's the syntax? You have like a bunch of elements which are have tags. Same with HTML, same as HTML. You just have a tag, closes a tag. At the end, you can have empty elements. Each of the tags can have attributes. So here's an example. In the beginning, you always need to define like what the XML version and whatnot it is. And then you always have a root element that is unique. So you can't have like two root elements. And then you have a bunch of elements that are closed. As pairs, right? There shouldn't be like any interlaced stuff or some weird mixing and matching of tags going on. It should be a tree. But if you're using any sort of proper XML editor, it will warn you like, hey, you messed up here. Fix it. And then here we have elements with some attributes, and yeah, that's pretty much it. So must only always be one root element. So there's at the origin of an XML document, there's no like multiple roots. There's one main element where it's the start of everything, and then every start tag must have a matching end tag. Elements may be nested, but they shouldn't overlap, right? Sub-elements must be properly nested, so there's no, like, you know, start a tag, start another tag, and then close the first one. So then you have, like, this, you know, mixed and matches of openings and closings. Attributes are optional. They're... If you have a schema, you can enforce that, you know, these properties should have specified attributes, and then just use any sort of quote to encase the attribute values. There shouldn't be more than two attributes with the same name. And you need to escape all of the symbols that can be interpreted for something else, like this and this end up being escaped for something else that not, otherwise it would like mess up with the structure of the document. Also, it's case sensitive. If a document is well formed, then like whatever editor you are using will not complain, and whatever parser you're using will also not complain. If you have a badly defined document, every XML parser is going to be like, hold up, this is bad, I cannot accept this, please fix it. So, element can contain text, attributes, other elements, or a mix of the above. So, here for bookstore, we just have like a bunch of nested tags underneath. Every book tag has a category attribute, and then they have like a bunch of text inside. Here you can see that both tags and text can coexist. It's the same as HTML. Starting tag, end tag. So if you make some squares like this, it will also always be that you could like collapse whatever the outer tag is, and you will you could just hide whatever is inside, and it should always work. So here's some stuff that cannot happen. So here we start child 2, right? And then we start child 3. And then we close child 2 without closing the innermost tag, which means like where does child 2 like end compared to like child 3 doesn't really work, because this is then this does not become like a proper like tree structure, so this is invalid. This is invalid because there's two root elements to the document, and this is well formed. So attributes store like additional information about an element without adding something else underneath as a child. Usually it's like some complementary information about that specific field, right? So here we have height, and what we want to store in height is the data, right? It's 107. The complement of that data is what is the unit of the data, it's feet, right? So it's kind of, it's still important information, but it's kind of like secondary information. The main information is like what's the height of this wonder. So that's why it becomes an attribute. But there's a, like a lot of room for people to just do whatever they want when it comes to attributes or values. Which is kind of bad, but it is what it is. So here we have some different name tags, and they specify like what language it's for, right? And it kind of becomes like metadata in a way, where it's like this is additional information about what this tag is about, as opposed to being like the main information in that tag. So some, where is it? Yeah, main image there. Some elements don't need to have like any content of their own. So some tags just need some attributes to be, for it to be enough to specify like what the data should be. It's the same in HTML when you have like image tags. That is just, you don't need to put anything inside of the image tag. You can just specify like what the URL is and whatnot. So that's the same. And then you don't need to have like a, both a closing and a starting and a closing tag. You just need like one that self-closes. Comments, also same as HTML. Just a little exclamation mark and then two dashes. If you're using an editor, it'll be colored in a different way as well. And this is stuff that the computer will just ignore, right? It's there for extra information to whoever's reading your file, but the parser or whatever will just ignore it and move on. And here's some entities. So all these could easily be confused by the computer as, oh, you did a typo, like you're starting a tag here that is all wonky, or you're creating an attribute in a place that you shouldn't. So instead of actually using those characters, we just use the escaped version of them. So if you type that specific character in your file and then the parser complains like, hey, you are opening a tab, the tag that you shouldn't, or something else, then you just need to go and search online what is the escaped version of this character, and then you just replace that with this. So here, for example, if we have a sending a message that the salary should be lower than 1,000. Instead, we replace it with the and sign, and then LT, and don't forget the semicolon afterwards. That completes the entity. So an entity always starts with the ampersand sign and always ends with a semicolon, and whatever is in between, you can either like try and guess. So here, it's the lower than sign, LT, lower than. Here, amp, GT, greater than, quote, apostrophe. Maybe you can figure out by yourselves, but usually just go online. I haven't memorized any of these. If there's some information that shouldn't be parsed by the XML processor, you can just enclose it in the CData section, and then it will just, the interpreter will just be like, this is some character data, shouldn't be parsed into XML, this is just a string, I'm just going to skip it. So you can use this CData tag that you see there, and then you can just put whatever you want. You don't need to escape anything, you don't need to worry about it. It's usually useful if you're just sending some, you know, JavaScript stuff, or yeah, in general shouldn't really use it, but it is an option. As a some developer was probably like, oh, this is stupid, I just want to do this and not have to worry about escaping stuff. And then they just put in like this shortcut of doing it. But it's probably bad. And yeah, that is the end of these slides for XML. So now you have a basic understanding of what this is, hopefully. It's not that different from HTML, which I guess basically all of you have like at least looked at it before. Any questions about this very quick exposition of what it was? No? It's pretty straightforward stuff. Cool. Time to take a break then, so I can stop talking for a bit. Yeah, like 15 minutes or something. Does this even do anything? Like, I think it really needs to be close here for it to actually work. I think it's the cable it's also. Yeah, you can't really extend it either. Yeah. Has to do with volume or something. Well, everybody can hear me at least, otherwise they'd complain, I guess. So, yeah, what text editors do you use? Do you all use Visual Studio Code or for stuff, for like programming related stuff? Yeah. Yeah, you use Notepad? This, if you just need to edit like any old document, or when you get like the SQL file, for example, you can open it here. So this is just like a normal like way of editing text, writing text, opening text, doing stuff like that. Yeah, that's works, but it's a bit. This is a bit lighter weight than IntelliJ. And like at least for me, like a lot of the functionality here is makes more sense than the stuff that is in IntelliJ. Yeah, are they computer people or? Yeah, yeah. Like you have like a lot of useful functionality in like Visual Studio Code, like being able to add like multiple cursors to multiple lines if you want to like write the same thing multiple places, and you can say you have like a document, like let me open a SQL file here, or something else, assignments, XML, oh, this is the solution, huh, is there like a proper, huh. Yeah, whatever, I don't care. This is the solution for assignment 5 part 1. Just don't look very in deep into what is there. But say for example you can like search for something like control F and then name and then use control shift L and then you select all the name things that you've matched. Yeah, so you have like cursors everywhere, which is also control K. Yeah, something. And you can like add cursors in like multiple places, say like here and here. And then you can just like change two names at once, all that stuff. So it's useful for these type of things. But what I wanted to show you is there's like some extensions that handle XML things. I've put them in Blackboard. So this extension will give you validation for XML files. Say for example I screw up and I don't close the tag properly, it'll warn you like, hey, this needs to end in a proper way. If I misplace tags interweaved like this, it'll also warn you. And oh, this will, it's actually because of the schema, so this is validating against the schema, but I can just do this, or do this. So you see that it's not terminated by the proper thing. So all these rules, you should know them because it will be like a lot less frustrating if you're not always fucking up when you're writing your XML. But it's okay if you do, because the text editor will warn you when stuff is wrong. So all these extensions that I've posted on Blackboard are useful just to do all the things that we've that we need for assignment 5. And it'll make your life easier, so you don't have to, you know, just wing it. And you don't actually need to know anything about XML. You just edit the rule, tell you. So we can move on, I guess. Any questions about any of the XML stuff? It's all like pretty straightforward. Yeah. So skipping along to 2 weeks from now. So we have XML documents, right? And they have a specific structure. And the computer can understand them, and the human can understand them, and it's all nice, but like, what's the point of the computer understanding what the XML file is, or its format? One of the useful things of the format is that you can actually validate the data that you're getting to make sure that everything that is written in the XML file is valid, right? So the same way we restrict the types of data or the columns in databases, and we make sure like we can't insert null values, all that stuff, we can also do that for XML to make sure that everything that some user that's created the XML file has written into it is valid and it fits the format of what we specified for that XML file. So for example, if you know we expect a field to have like some geographical data, some coordinates, no idiot is writing like a street address into it, you know, stuff like that. There's two types of documents. Well-formed, if it obeys the syntax of XML, and then valid, if it conforms to a specific like structure that we've defined. Two types of XML parsers, non-validating or validating. So, non-validating if they won't check any of these constraints. Validating if they will also check that on top of it being valid XML, it also fits whatever schema we've defined. So a schema can determine like what type of elements should appear in the document, so people just don't go along and put a bunch of different tags in stuff that doesn't make any sense. So if we have a document that is about university departments, they don't go around and putting data about Hearthstone or whatever, right? You can validate like what shows up. You can specify what has to be there. So if you have like a document that specifies attendance for a class, we can enforce that, like, you know, there should be a name for that class. So every document should have like that specific field. So what attributes can appear or not, and what type of structure we have, and what values should be attributes of stuff, or text fields, or all that stuff. So you get a You take an XML file, you take a schema file, you process it, and then you're either coming out with a valid result, or you're the scheme or the validator, the processor, is going to be like, hold up, this file is bad, don't use it, you need to change stuff. So these XML schema validators, or like the validation file, follows a specific syntax, a specific format, and the computer will be able to go through that syntax file, and then it'll map it against the XML file and make sure everything is okay. So here is an XML file. It's a bit poorly formatted, but I guess that's okay. So here's some constraints. The location has to have like a latitude, a longitude, and an uncertainty. Latitude must be decimal with a value between minus 90 and 90 plus. Longitude minus 80 and plus 180. And then for latitude and longitude, the number of digits to the right must be exactly 6 digits. And then the uncertainty must be a non-negative integer. And then the uncertainty units must be either meters or feet. So if we're sharing this type of document and some idiot comes along and starts like changing what the uncertainty of the measurements are, or like not putting in all the values that they should, then you know there should be something that enforces them to not screw up, right? Suddenly they can't like go around and just pass three values for each of those fields, for example. So to do that, we need to have a schema file that will like validate all these constraints. Are all these like valid, or are all these fulfilled? If yes, then cool, data is okay. If not, just throw an error. Moving along, how does this look? So they have the XSD format, their XSD schemas. The root element is schema, and then it just kind of starts like this. So you have XS and then schema, and then like a reference to like the schema definition of the standard, which you can see like how old it is, 2001. The schema definition might have some attributes as well. And this XML and SXS links to what the data type should be and what the standard is for that specific schema file. And then we have in the XML file, we can reference like the schema file that should validate it. So you do that by specifying what the schema type should be and the namespace. All this stuff is you just copy paste from another file that you see, basically. And what this will do is if you have an XML parser and XML something that is going through your file, it will give you some warnings if whatever you're passing on doesn't match the schema definition file that you've passed along. So here, if I am changing something, I add a new field, there's a schema definition that's like, oh, you can't have like a field in the schema in that specific backpacker entity. So then you get a warning of like, hey, what's up? This is not okay. It needs to be name here. So, So here's an example of how we validate this stuff. So here we specify there should be an element with the name of wonder, and then there it's a complex type, and it's a sequence, and it should have three elements: name, location, and height, and they should have the type of string, right? So this means just by using this validation, we make sure that there's no more tags inside of wonder than it should. It's just like, okay, you need exactly these elements, and they should have this type. So a simple element is one that contains text and nothing more. So a simple element doesn't have any attributes or any other elements inside of it. It's not empty. And then the text can have like different types, but we can specify like some of the restrictions on it to be like, okay, you know, the length of the data in this field shouldn't be more than like a specific amount, or it should conform to a specific format. And if an element is not simple, it's complex, and then it should have, you know, it can have attributes, and it can be empty, it can contain text, it can be have other elements, or both, doesn't matter. So this is an element which is a simple type. If we're going to add restrictions to it, you can require the data to match like that defined pattern. So here we have the access element, and then we specify the name of what it should be, and then the type. So and then that type can be like Boolean or date or integer or whatever, right? Like the normal data types. Other attributes a simple element may have is like the default value, and fixed, no other value may be specified. So here's a few XML elements. So we have a last name, and we specify that, you know, a simple element, which is has the name of the tag, which is last name, should have a type of string. Here we have age and should have a type of integer. And here we have date born and should have a type of date. If whatever data we're putting into these fields don't match these specific types, right? If I, instead of 37, I actually wrote down like the words 37, this would fail, and the editor would show a warning like, hey, this is not valid. These are all the predefined numeric types, so you have like all the normal stuff, positive, integer, short, int, whatever. You can reference this back later. And then there's a few different string types, so like a string, which is normal string, normalized string that doesn't have any of weird characters like tabs and new lines and that sort of white space. And then tokens, which is stuff that doesn't have any white space at all, other than single spaces. For dates, the formats are this. So year, month, day, hour, minute, second. And then for date time, you put the T in between both of those. So here's some examples. We have customer date of birth. The validation is a date time, so we have the date, year, month, day, a T in between, and then hour, minutes, and seconds. This will validate OK. Here, if we just have an address, type string. If we have a number, just type int, right? If we want this to be a decimal, then we wouldn't use int. We would use like decimal or float or whatever. If we, there is the option of it, this just not being a number. It could be a number, but it could also not be a number. Then you can't use the type int, then you need to use type string. So simple elements can have default values. A default value is automatically assigned to the element when no other value is specified. So if we specify here that the default value should be red, that when validating the XML file, the schema is going, or the schema validator is going to assume, like, if this is empty, then it's red. And then we'll allow for empty simple elements to be present. If it's a fixed value, then that means that it will also autofill, but it will not allow for anything else other than red to be in that specific field. So it's red and red only, not anything else. So here are some examples. If we have a type string, we can specify that the default should be UK. And then if we, or it should fix, then it should always be UK, because we don't have any other customers other than in the UK. And then for default, we have unknown. So we can specify how many number of occurrences of an element at a specific point in the document. This is called cardinality and is specified by the min occurs or max occurs. So by default, we always assume like if element is specified in the schema, it's one, right? If it can be like, if it can not be present or it can be present more than once, then we need to specify these min occurs and max occurs to match however many things should show up. So here, if we have this specific tag inside of the schema somewhere, then that means there has to be exactly one customer date of birth tag in the XML. If we specify that it should be minimum zero and maximum unbounded, then it could be for a there can be from zero to infinity customer orders inside of whatever tag this is specified. And if we have customer hobbies tag, if we specify that minimum occurs to 2 and maximum occurs at 10, those, the number of tags in the XML document need to be within this range. So all attributes are declared as simple types, and only complex elements can have attributes. So simple elements can't have attributes. Stuff like this, if it has an attribute, then it becomes a complex type. But the attribute itself is always declared as a simple type. So this is how we declare it for a complex type: access attribute, and then the name, and then the type that it should be. And then again, we can define like what the default value is, if it should be a fixed value, and then if it should be optional or required. By default, every attribute that is validated is optional. So here's a validation for language. lang should be type XS string. And this would be inside of the last name validation tag. And then again, default and fixed. And what the use is. So you never really need to specify that the use is optional, but you do need to specify that the use is required. So that attribute needs to exist in that specific tag. So a lang tag always needs to exist in the last name tag. So this is so heavy and boring to go through. I have to go through all of it. Fuck. So simple types can have ranges put on their values. So these are known as restrictions. General form is to put for putting a restriction on the text value is this. So we specify the element and the name, and then we specify simple type for the base and the type, and the restrictions that should be applied to it. So these can be like, depending on the type of the field or the attribute, then we can specify different things, right? So for numeric types, we can specify like a pattern, a total number of digits, how many fractional digits there are in the number, if they're between a range. For strings, we specify the length and max length and all that stuff. And for dates and times, again, like what's the minimum date, what's the maximum date. So here's a, so we have an XML element there that is age, that is 50. And then we specify that this is an element. And afterwards, we specify for the single type age, you should have a restriction that it should be an integer. And then it also should be between 0 and 110, right? We can also specify, give a name to that single type. So XS element should have age and an age type. And then what is an age type? It's a restriction that is set up here that it should be of type integer and between 0 and 110. This is useful for example, if we want to reuse age type in a lot of different places. So we don't have to specify what this is everywhere where we have numbers, right? Or where we have ages. So we just specify it once, and then we can refer back to it whenever we need to. So the restrictions on strings, it has to have exactly a specific length. Minimum or maximum of length match a specific pattern. And then what should be done with white space? So here we have a password, and we specify that the length for that password should be exactly 8 digits. Here we specify that it should be between 5 and 8 digits, so restriction, and then specify the minimum length and maximum length. For enumerations, we can say that the values that should be within the season tag should be one of these values of the enumeration, which means if it's something else, then it will fail because it needs to match the seasons. And then, yeah, for complex types, we have four kinds, empty ones, elements that contain other elements that contain only text, and elements that contain other elements and text. And all of these may contain or not attributes. So here's a complex XML element, which is empty. Some that have other things. So one that has just text. Remember, it becomes a complex element because it has an attribute. If it didn't have any attributes, if it just had the value inside, then it would be a simple element. And this has both text and a tag. So to define restrictions on complex types, we just use complex type and then put in all the information relative to it inside. So have the element, and then complex type, and then attributes, or multiple attributes, or specific elements. And then if we specify that there should be a sequence, then the items should show up in that specific order. So first name is always going to show up first, and then last name is going to show up second. So the order is important. So containing other elements. But this can also be done in different ways. So it can be a sequence where they have to show up in that specific order, and then all of them need to show up. They can be, you can specify that it should be all, so then all of them can show up, or should show up, but it can be in whatever order we want, or it can be choice where, like, either of them can show up, none of them can show up, doesn't matter. So here we have all, which means, like, we can have in the XML file, we can have last name before first name, and it'll be okay, right? Here for choice, it can either be like employee or member. You can have both, you can have just one of the two, it doesn't matter. Just show, you can just have whatever inside of the person. And then you can specify if it should contain only text and attributes. So you can add a inside of a complex type, single content. And then you can define an extension or a restriction inside of that simple content for whatever that, like the text inside of the complex type is. So here for the complex type of food, we specify that the category should be a string, and yeah, here we specify that for we have a simple content, and then we have an extension, which means they should be an integer, and then the attribute of country should be a string. So simple content, attributes, and character data, no child elements, and complex content, it's when we have like all the inside stuff. Then we can also have mixed content, so stuff that has both text and other elements. And then we specify that the content complex type should be mixed, and then the text itself is not mentioned and may go anywhere, so it's basically ignored, and all the other stuff is validated inside of it. So by adding mixed, it basically means like have all these attributes and then also have some text. So here what we specify is if we have like a letter that has dear Mr. whatever, then we specify that inside of letter there should be all these attributes or name, order ID, ship date. And by setting mixed, it also means that we can have text around them. It doesn't matter. Put text whatever you need. That's step one. Okay, sure. This is like an example, but it's basically the steps of how to define a schema file. So I'll just skip to the end. So what the schema file does basically is, you know, there's a ship order that is a complex type, then it defines that inside of it should be an order person, and inside of that it should be an element, which is a complex type that has all these fields, blah, 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 right? So the way to, normally you'd already have a schema file without having like an XML file. So first you define the schema of like, how does this should, how should this look? And then you go about like creating XML files for it. You can also do both at the same time, where you can have, as you're writing stuff, you can define you can define like the schema and then go along and define like what this specific type should be. So you have backpacker and whatever. And then you just kind of create it as you go. Like, oh, I'm going to create like a backpacker's type, which is here, and then specify like a type, and then you kind of go and create your XML file as you're creating the schema file together to make sure everything is valid as you go. Or, yeah, it kind of is up to you. So, this method where the schema validation kind of mirrors what your XML file is can be a bit messy, because you look at this and it's very, you know, it's very tree structured base, so it can become like super huge if you have like duplications, if you have like some validation sub thing that you're going to use throughout your document in different places, it can become a mess. So then you can use refs, and the way you use refs is to, first, you go through your XML document and you figure out like what is all the basic stuff that I have, what are all the attributes that I have, and then you can create create like all the elements and all the attributes and all these other things using the ref keyword. So here we've defined that there is an element which the name is order person and it has a string. So then when we're creating a complex element that is shipped to, we can say that there's going to be an element and it's going to match this ref, which is name. And this will go through like all the definitions that we've had and find the definition for name. And it'll be like, okay, this is a string. And then all these don't need to be defined inline. We can just reference stuff like this. You can also do this for more complex definitions. So say, for example, here we defined what a complex type of ship to is, and then after that we here we define what we use that ship to reference, both here, and if we had some other element that also used chip2, we would just define this in one specific place, and then we'd be able to reuse that definition in multiple places by using the ref keyword. Yeah. So I'm sure now you can just start and do a bunch of create XML files and do validations and do all that stuff. This is what assignment 5 is going to be, at least the first part. It's going to be, I don't know if it's published yet actually, but it will be creating some XML files that match a specific data, and it will be afterwards validating that data. So of course me just being here and like talking about all this shit's boring as fuck. And I'm sure like you might have at least gotten like a little bit of stuff, maybe not all of it, but at least like a basic understanding of where to start and where to go find stuff when you need to do the exercise. Yeah, at least now you have the ability to go and figure out how to actually start it. So I'll talk to the TAs and see if we can release the assignment. So I don't know how you're doing with assignment 4. Are you done or no? Yeah. But for the people that are, then they can just start assignment 5 like right away. Yeah. Any questions about this stuff? It's very just like verbose, and you just need to look at the definitions and just go and, you know, have the reference side by side when you're doing these things to actually be able to do it. I don't know any of this stuff by heart as well, and just search online or like have some reference sheet. But yeah, any questions? No. Yeah, I think that's enough. Have a nice weekend then. Bye bye.